Sunday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast, continuing a tradition now 4 years in the making, the top 10 players in the NBA. We do this every March. We've come a long way from 2014, the first season that I did this, when the top four were LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, and Kevin Love at number four. Steph Curry took the top spot the last 2 years. There will be a new number one this year. But before we get to that, I should remind you that we are sponsored by Movement Watches, mvmtwatches.com/capspace to get you 15% off your first order. Actually, no, not your first order, your order. And Indochino, you can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 by entering that familiar capspace code. So Danny, let's get started here. I had a little bit of a change in my criteria this year that we talked about when we were at the Warriors-Grizzlies game today, but before we recorded. Basically, last year I said it was, if you wanted to start a season with a certain player with average talent around him, you know, who would you most want to have? I've changed that this year in large part because of my number one player's performance last year in the playoffs, to say if I wanted to win a playoff series with average talent around this player, who would my number one pick be? And of course, my pick is going to be LeBron James. But what do you think of changing up the criteria a little bit? Is that a more relevant criteria than what we had last year when you're really talking about winning at the highest levels?
I think when you're discussing who the best players are, I find the discussion in terms of absolutes more interesting than best regular season, because then consistency and all of that goes into play. Now, if I were building a team, of course, you have to, it depends on surrounding talent in terms of where you're classifying success. But I think it's a more interesting question. But more than it's a more interesting question, I think it's a better way of approximating and calibrating value than the regular season, because while durability is wonderful and extremely important, at the end of the day, while I feel like Mark Jackson, it is really about giving yourself the best chance of winning a championship.
Yeah, just don't go preaching on any street corners and letting people upload it to YouTube, though. That would be a little disturbing. But yeah, I think that's right. And also just the fact that, especially for older players, the fact that they can turn it on as LeBron did defensively in the NBA Finals last year, I think matters. And it also, to me, matters a little bit. I think there are certain styles that can be more effective in the playoffs, or certain regular season styles that are less effective. It could be something like you're more easily exploited defensively and teams are really game planning for that. It could be that you're extremely reliant on fouls and kind of BS foul drawing, not like I'm going to go hard to the rim and get fouled trying to legitimately score. And, you know, Harden might fall into that category. Lou Williams would fall into that category, though he's obviously not going to appear on this list. But whether it's because the refs kind of get used to your tricks, or just the other team does after playing you for seven games, they just learn how to not foul as much over the course of a series. I think that could be a little bit less effective as well. So that's going to inform, I think, this analysis a little bit. The two statistics that I'm going to be quoting here, Kevin Pelton, as usual, was kind enough to send me his statistics that he creates based on the box score. Warp, and what I'm going to be citing to, is win percentage. Basically, the idea being that if you had five of these guys, what percentage of games would you win in the league? Or maybe it's not even five guys. It might just be if you added them to an average team, what percentage of games would you win? But nonetheless, it's basically kind of like PER, but it's just a better version of it that's more tested, that correlates better with winning, and we'll just say the league rankings for that. And then, of course, ESPN's RPM is the other thing we're going to look at for some of these rankings. But one thing that I found is the rankings, both of those categories, are not really going to match up with my personal subjective rankings, much different than in past years when I thought that my personal rankings hewed more closely to what some of the statistics said.
Yeah, there certainly is some of that this year. And something that, not really at the top end of this, because I have such a firm sense of those players over the years, and the top guys are all battle tested in various ways. But getting down into, let's say, the 8 to 10 range, and then the guys that were competing for those spots, I had some real trouble for some of them separating out the issues with them in their current locations versus putting them in this construct. And for some of them, it's really mentally freeing, if it's like, oh, if you're taking them out of the shackles of what they're in right now. But for other guys, you're just kind of trying to wrap your brain around it and having some real trouble. I like that I'm saying all this without saying any names.
Well, let's start with that, and of course we're going to do tiers as well here. And I guess one other thing too that's really struck me before we started is this is by far the hardest that I've ever that it's ever been. I mean, I say that every year, but especially down in the kind of, you know, 7 to 15 range, it was really hard to separate guys out. And a big part of that is just because pretty much everyone in the league is healthy this year. The only two guys that would be in consideration for this that are injured right now are Lowry and Durant, and those guys are, hopefully will be back and have had excellent seasons up to this point. You know, at this time last year, like Anthony Davis was out. You know, there were times in the years before that, like the year before that, KD was out with a broken foot, so he wasn't really a part of the list. You had a lot of the great players were, you know, Chris Paul had missed some time, Blake Griffin, although he's probably not going to appear on this list for me. And I think for everyone who wants to complain about resting, hey, guess what? Like, the 20 top 20 players in the league have, like, all pretty much been healthy this year. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's been such a fun year for that. And while some players are in imperfect situations, at least we've gotten to see them play.
All right, so tier one to me was LeBron James by himself. And I thought that Steph Curry, he was in a tier number one by himself last year. He was in the midst of one of the greatest regular seasons that we've ever seen. He then got injured. We'll never know if he had he not gotten injured, whether he could have maintained that level in the playoffs, but he did not. And then this year, he certainly has taken a step back, even as the Warriors now have righted the ship and won, I think, 7 straight in KD's absence. Curry looking much more like the player that he was 2 years ago when he was a deserving MVP, but no one really, I thought, was that great that year compared to some of the MVPs we've seen. And so he drops out of it now. It's LeBron James by himself, especially since he had one of the greatest NBA Finals series ever last year. He has not played like the best player in the league this year, but I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt at this point because of the level that he reached in last year's playoffs, a level that nobody else on this list reached in last year's playoffs. And he's shown, despite the fact that he's age 32, the ability to turn it on. We may just not see that from him next year. I mean, it's going to be a playoffs when we finally figure out that, like, Father Time has actually caught up to him, but he certainly is having a wonderful offensive season. His jumper has come around as well, which was the big weakness that we cited until last year's finals of, like, why he wasn't as dominant as he had been in his prime. And now, you know, he's shooting 38% on threes. A lot of those are self-created. You know, maybe he won't be the same defensive force, but offensively he's having, you know, as good of a year as ever, really.
LeBron at his best was one of the reasons he was so incredible is that he checked a series of boxes as a player that you just don't see very often. He could run an offense. He could basically, he was one of the best passers in the league. He could switch defensively, but he could also be a capable rim protector at his best moments. And what has impressed me so much about his aging is that he's not checking all the same boxes as he did before. You know, he's still good at switching. He's not where he was. I think he's gotten a little bit better at moments as a rim protector. He's gotten worse as a chase down guy, except for that block in game 7, of course. But this year, his shooting has been much better. We're reaching the point now where I'm not going to say it's permanent, but it's, you know, it's been consistent enough that I want to give him some credit for it. And so you have all of those things that are running together, and he still was at such a high level at his prime that even as he's kind of taken steps back in some of those ways, there still is not anybody that gets to where he was or where he is now. And so, like, the guys that to me were in the next closest consideration, not to spoil it too much, but when you look at what Kawhi and what Kevin Durant do, LeBron is just so much more of an all-encompassing guy, particularly on the offensive end. And as we both feel that offense is, especially for perimeter players, offense is more important than defense in generating reliable offense for yourself and others, that even if it is a chance that LeBron is not, like, that a chance that LeBron is what he was for 4 games in the NBA Finals last year, that chance is enough to make the difference.
Yeah, I think that's right. So you're in agreement then that LeBron James is number one and in a tier by himself at this point?
I originally did not have that, but when I really thought about the criteria that you gave and I thought about the way that he's played, I ended up there.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, there's no way to know whether this is actually going to be true until we see the playoffs this year.
Right, like if we redid this on July 1st, it's entirely possible that that wouldn't be true anymore.
I will move on to tier two momentarily, but first, this for Movement Watches. MVMTwatches.com/capspace is how to get started with them and get 15% off your order. I'm staring at my movement watch right now, the Slate. I also have the Gunmetal and Sandstone. They have a number of different sizes and styles starting at just $95. I never really had owned a watch. I was like, oh, I have my cell phone. I can figure out what time it is that way. But I also never knew that watches that I really liked were available at this price point. I would go into a department store or another store and see a watch that I liked for $500. I'm like, I don't need this. That's way too expensive. But Movement is a fraction of what department store brands typically charge. This revolutionary pricing is possible because they cut out the middleman and just ship to you directly with classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism that's led to over 500,000 watches being sold in over 160 countries. If you're an international listener and you're kind enough to have a desire to support the show, a Movement watch is a fantastic way to do so. So you can step up your watch game. Go to movementwatches.com, MVMTwatches.com/capspace, which is easy to remember that URL, of course, because we talk about capspace all the time in the program, and get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns. That's movementwatches, MVMTwatches.com/capspace. Join the movement. So my tier two actually has five players in it this year.
Interesting.
And by the way, stats wise, LeBron James this year, number eight in Kevin Pelton's win percentage, number three in ESPN's RPM. So certainly nowhere near the best in the league in those categories. But again, you know, just because of his playoffs last year, had to be up there. So my tier two, five players, I will list them all in order here. Steph Curry, still number two for me, and I'm sure I will have to do a lot of justifying for that, which I plan to get to. Kevin Durant, number three. Kawhi Leonard, four. James Harden, five. Russell Westbrook, six. And a lot of that really is based on the playoff performances that we've seen in the past, more so than what we've seen this regular season.
I find that very interesting because we'll have to talk through some of the differences that we have. My tier two is only two guys, and it's not the guy that you have second. My tier two is Durant and Kawhi because their versatility on the defensive end, you know, I think Durant's defensive ceiling, while not what Kawhi is, Kawhi's, you know, two-time defensive player of the year, is closer than I think maybe some people think. I think, you know, we were there for game three and four of that Oklahoma City series when he was a big part of what made that work. And offensively, Kawhi has taken these huge steps. And while he is not what Stephen Curry is, what James Harden is, the combined impact is truly special. And so I have Durant higher just because I believe his offensive ceiling is higher, and I think that's more important. But I have those two in a different level. And I even think I have a much stronger opinion about that regarding Harden and Westbrook than I do about Curry, because Curry has shown that he can reach that level.
Yeah, that's what my big reason for Curry is. You know, he led a team to a championship in 2015. People complain that he wasn't that good in that Cavs series. I thought he actually was quite good and just had the one bad, like, 5 out of 23 game in game two that they lost.
Wait, can I make a quick point on that?
Yeah.
So some of the reason that happens is his counting stats in that series were low. That was a really, really slow series. You know, like, that was, I haven't looked at his stats per 100 possessions in that series, but I would guess, because I remember it being intensely slow, that might be part of what changed all that. He also should have won finals MVP in that final.
Yeah, you and I have talked about that, but also just the fact that they had to double team him all the time, and then, you know, he opened everything else up. I mean, the fact that Andre Iguodala was able to score 20 points a game was all because he was on the floor in that series. So I think that's a big part of it. I mean, he's had some ridiculous performances in the playoffs, even when he was inconsistent last year after the knee injury. His game seven was an all-time performance against Oklahoma City, was not able to come through in game seven against the Cavs. That certainly is no good, but he had a very good 2015 playoffs. You know, some of those games that he had against New Orleans in 2015, against Houston in game three against Houston in 2015, some of what he did to Memphis on the end of that series, though he struggled early on, and game six against Oklahoma City last year, I thought he outplayed Russell Westbrook in that series, even though people kind of forget that. But certainly over the last three games, Curry outplayed Westbrook in that series. So I think that he, and then also just what he did in last year's regular season, still has a halo effect for me. And Also, he still ranks third this season in offensive RPM. His defensive RPM is down. I think that that can be a little fluky, especially when you're kind of in the mid-range of just not really that good, not really that bad. And the effect that he has, the gravity that he has, is still so enormous. And he's still, the Warriors, even with Kevin Durant on the team, will struggle to score sometimes when he's out of the game. So I do think I believe in him a little bit more, and the effect that he has too, even when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, and even when he isn't scoring well, I think is better than for guys like Russ or Harden, who are still kind of more offense only type of players. So we'll see. I mean, this is still, a lot of this is based on last year. You know, Curry clearly has not been as good as guys like Harden and Russ during this year's regular season, but there's still a little bit more of a halo effect from the last couple of years. I want to see Harden and Russ really kill it in the playoffs. You know, neither of them has been as effective as Curry has been to me the last couple of years.
So a quick little clarification thought experiment. If we were transporting 2014-15 Stephen Curry, but with the knowledge, so basically if this year was an exact replication of last year, he was sitting at the same numbers, let's say same impact, as nebulous as that is, I was thinking about where I would have him, and I would have him second, that theoretical Stephen Curry second, which is part of what made me want to put him in tier two, but I ended up settling away from that. But would you have that Stephen Curry as the number two spot, or would he even be tier one with LeBron?
Yeah, I think he would be tier one with LeBron, and probably actually even ahead of LeBron, just because, like, that player is just completely unprecedented. That's like a top five season of all time.
Well, no, I'm talking about 14-15, so. First MVP.
Oh, 14-15. Okay, I thought you were talking about 15-16. No, 14-15 to me would be about right about the same where Curry is right now.
Okay. Oh, and
I mean, I think he's...
Yeah,
he's basically kind of looking like that player to me this year, essentially.
The only other thing I wanted to contribute with, particularly with those three guys, because we have the same three guys there, but in a different order, is the idea of a presence, kind of their presence alone. And so the argument would be for Stephen Curry that his presence on a team means they're going to have a really good offense. We've talked about this recently with Nikola Jokic, that he's an interesting test for that kind of an idea. And Curry, you know, defensively, it's not a strength for him, but I don't think he's a huge negative on that end, and that's enough. And if we're using that same test offensively, I think that puts Curry above Harden and Westbrook, because, you know, while Curry has had better surrounding, more favorable surrounding talent for the last few years than those guys have had, he has proven that ability, whereas they haven't. And then with Durant and Kawhi,
we've seen him be a part of a truly outstanding defense, and he at least, like, doesn't break down mentally the way Harden and Russ do a lot defensively. So at least he's going to try his hardest to execute the scheme, even if, you know, when you're going at him one-on-one, it's probably easier to attack him than Harden and Russ. But I mean, this Warriors defense in large part has been awesome, even in the playoffs, and he's been able to be part of that, whereas Harden really never has been part of a great defense. And Russ, you know, for three games in that Oklahoma City series last year against the Warriors was, but it, you know, also had like some big breakdowns that contributed to them losing that series.
So using that same test, do you think that Kawhi alone means that a team is going to have a successful defense, top 10, let's say?
It's really impossible to answer that just because he's in such a great ecosystem in San Antonio. I don't think so. Just because if you have bad big men, it's just so hard to be good defensively, even though the Spurs do have some guys who've been bad defensively throughout most of their careers, guys like Gasol and Gasol used to be good actually back in his prime, but for the last few years, Aldridge, you know, not some world beaters. So I really don't know the answer to that question. If you just put him on some average team, is it going to make your defense good? I mean, I think he'll help a lot. But if, let's say, you compare him to Paul George, and I think he's a little bit better than Paul George, but, you know, probably pretty close. And Indiana is a pretty average defense this year, when they, having lost their coach and some of the other good defensive players that they have. So I think if, and Jimmy Butler, another example, right? I think Kawhi is better than both of those guys. But to just say you're going to have a top 10 defense just because you have a wing, there's only so much that guy can do, I think. Whereas if you compare to, say, Rudy Gobert or even Draymond Green, who can switch on to everybody and also protect the rim, be more of a help defender, I think those guys are the ones I would really look at. It's like, all right, you're going to have an unbelievable defense just by having these guys out there.
I agree with you. I battled with that myself, and it's also part of the reason why I put Kawhi below Durant, just because I think Durant is more of the positive on the offensive end, like, and just because
I feel more confident. Outplayed Kawhi Leonard in that series last year. I thought that
also
was a big part of it. And you know, but it's, again, it's really hard to say it. And Kawhi is better this year, and KD might not be as good offensively this year, and certainly is not have as big of a role this year. So just basing on what happened in a six game series last year, kind of difficult to do that. But again, that's another one of those ones where, all right, until it's proven differently in the playoffs, I'm just going to go with kind of what it's been, you know, unless we've seen just like something so different this year. But, you know, now just because of KD's injury, Kawhi is very likely to outperform him in the playoffs this year. But we're going to give KD the benefit of the doubt. This is not like a major injury where you're going to worry about him going forward in the long term.
So the last two guys you have in this tier are the top two players for MVP. One of them is almost definitely going to win it.
And the two guys, well, I guess I had Harden fourth when we did it last time. But, you know, I mean, as I said, LeBron, Harden, Russ, Kawhi, all neck and neck for me for MVP. And I figured that having Harden and Russ this low would probably be the most controversial, or that with having Curry as high as I do. And now remember, also, these guys are all in the same tier. So it's very close between them. You know, this is not, I'm not saying that this is like some obvious pick. And to have a second tier that goes this deep really shows what the depth of the NBA is in terms of superstars these days.
To start with those two guys, how did you make the decision between the two of them? I ended up with Harden over Westbrook as well.
Yeah, I think it's just that in a playoff setting, I think that Russ is just a little bit easier to stop because he's not a great shooter. He's really reliant a ton on the fast break. It's not as devastatingly efficient on his own the way Harden can be. And granted, Harden has a much easier job with this current Houston roster than Russ does in Oklahoma City. I think that Russ just generally in the playoffs has not really proven to be efficient other than just in small bursts. And I think that's the biggest reason. It's just that, and I haven't seen Russ be able to be effective against the best defenses a lot of times because, you know, that battering ram style that he has can overwhelm a lot of teams. But if you're really locked in and you have guys there at the rim to stop him, if you have the personnel to switch on pick and rolls, I think that it's possible to make him be inefficient. Whereas Harden, early in his career, he really struggled in the playoffs. But I think the last 2 years, he's been pretty effective, and especially in that 14-15 season, he was really, really difficult to stop. But I also think he's a little bit more reliant on foul drawing as well, which is another reason that I put him a little bit below Curry and KD and Kawhi, because it's not only drawing fouls, but it's kind of the trickster foul drawing that, as you said, in the open is something that I think that the effectiveness of that can wane throughout a playoff series.
A major reason I put Harden over Westbrook is also that Westbrook has flaws in his game that are easier to exploit. He is not a great three-point shooter, but is a very willing three-point shooter, and we have seen various opponents, particularly the Warriors last year, but other opponents as well, take advantage of that in big moments. And that's a little bit different than the foul drawing in transition, but is incredibly important. It is exacerbated by his current teammates, and I don't blame him for that, but it's still something to consider that, to me, it makes Russ less versatile. That, you know, if you place that he's going to be, you want him as your fourth or fifth best three-point shooter on your lineup. Harden, he's second, third, you're all good.
Yeah, it's very difficult, obviously. There's really no good way to do this. Should we talk about Kawhi? I think it's interesting to me that especially during the regular season, Kawhi and KD are really the only good defensive players in this top six, you could say. LeBron could bring it on occasion, but he's kind of been coasting, and the Cavs are 22nd in defense, in part due to the fact that he does that this season. But to have a two-way guy, guys that you just cannot go after, I think it is interesting, though, to look at how few of some of these best players really are two-way players. It seems like perhaps there are not as many as there were in the past, but that's just an interesting thought that maybe we're at the point now where being just a outstanding offensive player, you just don't have as much energy for defense, and that's what makes someone like Kawhi or even KD, especially in this Warriors guys, so valuable. Although it is worth noting, actually, the Warriors' defense has not dropped off without KD at all.
Yeah, that is interesting. And they, in that earlier stretch, they were replacing him with even more clearly inferior guys. And then Matt Barnes is taking more time now, and I think he's substantially more capable on that end. But also, you know, tying with the idea of two-way wings, Paul George has not, you know, there was always the potential that he could be that guy. And even Jimmy Butler, like Jimmy Butler has grown leaps and bounds, but he never really kind of bridged the two sides at the same time. He could do that in a playoff series. I was going to say this year, but I still don't want the Bulls to make the playoffs, but they could do that. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like, Gordon Hayward's gotten better defensively. I think he might even be a little bit underrated defensively, but we're still kind of waiting for those people to really put it all together. And I know that's a lot of people put those eggs in the Andrew Wiggins basket long term, not right now, obviously, but there isn't that guy, you know, the Michael Jordan, you know, candidate for all first team all defense and MVP candidate. Like, there aren't that many of those guys.
Yeah. Well, Chris Paul fall into that category as well. And that's a way to transition into tier three. My tier three, you know, we've gotten through one through six now in the first two tiers. My tier three is Chris Paul by himself at the number seven overall player in the NBA. And Paul, number five in Kevin Pelton's win percentage and number one overall in RPM, although ninth in offensive RPM and 13th in defensive RPM. So not that outstanding in either category, but just again, because there are so few players that really stand out on both ends from some of those on-off statistics, that makes him number one overall in RPM. He's missed time. He's been dropping since he came back from that injury. He was playing at an unsustainable level for a guy his age, certainly, but I still think he is comfortably above this next tier of guys. That's why I have him by himself at seven. Is Chris Paul next for you? And if not, who is?
You talked about how your list was controversial because you have Harden and Westbrook at five and six. I have Harden and Westbrook at six and seven and have Chris Paul above both of them. I am.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought I guess we were talking too much on my list. That is going to be controversial. But, you know, I think, you know, Paul has been better than either of those two guys in the playoffs. I would agree with you there.
He's been better than them in the playoffs. And the offensive, so yeah, they've been different in offensive RPM this year. You know, Harden and Westbrook are a substantial amount.
Although there's also a substantial chance that Chris Paul is going to be injured in the playoffs, as he has been, I think, like three
basically
of his six years in L.A. Yeah, I mean, he tore up his hamstring in 2012, then 2015, it was another hamstring injury again, and then last year, you know, the hand injury, which, you know, you could say is a fluke, but then he had another hand injury this year, and he always seems to kind of crack it by, like, reaching in, you know, maybe his hands actually are kind of vulnerable. So when you throw in the chance that, hey, there's a 50% chance over the last 6 years that he's going to get an injury in the playoffs, you know, it becomes a little bit harder to me to rank him higher than Harden and Russ, both of whom really never get hurt except for Russ that one year.
I did not consider that. I will openly admit that the chance of injury was not something, because I feel like that's more anomalous. And I think back to last year before he got hurt, he created a more substantial difference in that series than I have ever seen in a single series from Harden or Westbrook. And I love both of those guys. He was
you're talking about against Portland?
Yeah, before he got hurt.
Yeah.
Like, he was disruptive. Well, he's their second best defensive player, and he's a point guard. Like, he's their best perimeter defender, and he's the reason their offense is so good. And so, yeah, you can certainly make an argument that Harden and Westbrook are better offensive players than Chris Paul. Like, I am sympathetic to that argument for a lot of completely obvious reasons. However, I think that margin is pretty close and arguable. And if it's that, if we're talking about that sort of margin, the gulf defensively, even if it's less important, makes all the difference for me.
Yeah, and Paul, of course, had an all-time great series in that first round series against San Antonio in 2015. But he's also older, and I think he's at the age now too where you start to wonder about, all right, how predictive is even last year or 2 years ago considering his age. So I think just because of his injury history both during the regular season and the playoffs, I had to put him a little bit lower. And also, just I think you can make the argument that Harden and Russ have improved so much just based on the regular seasons that they're having that I would probably probably have to put them above Paul, but I also just think that Paul just is not like quite a good enough scorer at this point in his career that he really just draws quite enough gravity from the defense. I mean, he definitely has been awesome this year for sure. And statistically too, I think if you look at Harden, number two in KP's win percentage, Russ number one, that's another thing that I look at as well. Kawhi is number three in that, KD is number four. It's just, if Chris Paul were like 28, then I wouldn't quite be thinking that there's enough of a drop off, but it's more even to me about just the improvement that Harden and Russ have shown during this regular season that to me puts Paul below him in addition to the health concern.
For me, this list is not predictive. This is not where I think this list will be on October 31st of this year, you know, like with the start of next season. It is, if we were doing a playoff series, well, not specifically right now, but you know, like this playoffs, where it would be. And I'm going to use what we have as kind of prior experience there a little bit. And what with Russ, like, yeah, Russ has been spectacular this year. I personally haven't seen that amazing improvement in his depth and his ability as a player. It's been more of a change of opportunity and a change in his day-to-day assertiveness. Yeah.
Well, he has been a lot. I mean, this could just be luck. I'm very open to this idea, but he has been much better in the clutch this year than he's ever been before.
Yeah,
that's
probably
the biggest difference.
Their clutch defense has been good too. While that's not entirely him, there are five players on his team, and he's probably, would you say he's the fifth best defensive player in their current closing lineup? I would.
Yeah, that's probably right.
And
that's probably right.
So like, yeah, it is a challenge, and their offense has been pretty good. I think last time we did 15-60, they were like third in offensive rating in that time. That's phenomenal, and Russ deserves a ludicrous amount of credit for that. But I think I've seen more growth personally in Harden than Westbrook. It might just be because I've been obsessed with Russell Westbrook for a long time.
Yeah.
But
he's also got real shooters around him. I mean, Harden's, you know, Russ's ecosystem has gotten worse, and
right.
Harden's has gotten way better with the shooters around him. The fact that he's got D'Antoni coaching him, he's got the ball, bringing the ball up the floor every possession.
Offensively, he's in about as perfect a system as you could get, realistically.
Right.
He has good pick and roll bigs. They can go in a lot of different lineup combinations. They've even fiddled with Ryan Anderson at center. So yeah, I think that's certainly a fair point to make, and is a reason why, you know, there's this weird thing. I mean, we've talked about it with MVP and this. Like, I haven't really looked at it in the last kind of couple weeks since we did awards, but right now I probably have Russ as my MVP. But I still think James Harden's a better basketball player, and they're close. They've been close for a little while now. And with Russ, the other kind of element of it that goes into this whole equation is, will this intense energy that he brings to everything, I feel like that's going to have diminishing returns in the playoffs when everybody else starts to ratchet up, because he can't go anywhere else. When you're already at 11, even if you go to 12, you're still, everybody else is going from like 6 to 9 or to 10. Like, I think that those things will be diminished. And yes, him getting rebounds and grabbing and going,
and
that's
also
always
playing
help.
more minutes in the playoffs too, and so you can make the argument that in fact, you know, it's harder for him to maintain his level in the playoffs than someone else. So who do you think is more actually let me go back here. So give me a summary then of like your tiers and your rankings.
Sure.
Now through your top seven.
Tier one, LeBron by himself. Tier two, okay, just Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. Tier three, Stephen Curry, Chris Paul, James Harden, Russell Westbrook.
Okay, so KD is number two, Kawhi three for you.
Yes.
Then Curry is four, Paul
yes.
five, Harden six, Russ seven. Okay. So that rounds out your tier three.
Correct. So we are in, basically, though we had them in different orders and different tiers, we end up at the same place in terms of having three spots left and starting tier four.
Of the guys we've mentioned so far in your tier two and three, my tier two, do you see any guys as more plug and play or less? Because the criteria in theory was that we're trying to say with average talent around them, you know, as opposed to in their present situation. Obviously, it's very difficult to divorce them from their present situation. But just thinking about it hypothetically, is anybody more or less plug and play?
I think Curry, just if we're assuming, you know, closer to 14, 15 Curry, that shooting can translate. And he's been a good passer. And I think that you could have him work in a variety of systems. He wouldn't be as good, but he could be close. And also, like Kevin Durant, part of why I have him over LeBron is that he can fill a couple of different offensive roles.
Over Kawhi, you mean?
Sorry. Clarification. Over Kawhi. Different elite small forwards. Is because I can see him thriving in a series of different offensive roles. He wasn't great as being kind of like the alpha and the omega in that second unit for the Warriors. But outside of that, you know, like he's a really nice catch and shoot guy. He's the most versatile offensive, like, you know, scorer. He's the most versatile scorer in the league. And versatile scoring is something that can translate a lot of different teams, lot of different systems. And
he could also guard a lot more positions too defensively.
He could switch.
Yeah. I think Russ is the one guy I would point to as being the least plug and play, because he's not a guy that you feel like you have to guard on the perimeter that much when he doesn't have the ball. He's the only one of these guys who is a below average 3-point shooter. And he also just, you know, has to have like this crazy high usage rate. He's the only one of these guys who's been criticized for dominating the ball, for not allowing Kevin Durant to get it that much. Now, I would say that given the lack of other options, he wasn't really, a lot of that criticism was undeserved. But if you put him on a team that has some other really good players, I think that it's possible that he wouldn't fit in quite as well in terms of his style. But I think all these guys are guys who would fit pretty well. Russ is the only one that I would look at as maybe there could be some issues.
I don't have much of an issue with that at all.
On the other hand, though, you can say, hey, Russ has by far the least talent and shooting of any of these guys on any of these teams. And he's still been able to be very effective and make their offense effective because he's been able to find a style with this fast breaking, with the intensity, with this high usage that works with the basically really crappy offensive personnel compared to the others. So what could he do if he actually had some shooting around him? You know, that's an interesting question too.
I do think
that overall, though, his style, there's always going to be a ceiling on how efficient he can be. You know, he's never going to be a guy who has a 60% true shooting. And if I'm not mistaken, all of the other players that we're talking about in this tier and above are at that level of efficiency.
Who would you say of this group of seven has the most upward mobility between now and July 1st?
Ooh, that's tough.
I would say KD
doesn't have much. He's probably got the least. And Russ is going to lose in the first round, so it would be hard to say him. I mean, to me, it's between Curry, Kawhi, and Harden. Curry, if only because he's shown the ability to get to this crazy level before. I mean, you can't discount the fact that he could get back to that all-time great level. It seems unlikely to me. And then Kawhi and Harden, you know, if either of them could lead their team to the finals, then you're really looking at them probably having to jump a level, especially, you know, I think either of those guys, really.
For my list, it's Curry, just because I have him in tier 3 and number 4. Like, I could see him going up. But just from the perspective of your list, I think it's probably Harden in that way. I mean, because Kawhi, what he is now, I think it'd be really hard to put him in the only way to me that the way he gets in tier 1 is if LeBron isn't tier 1 anymore. You know, like if LeBron isn't by himself, then Kawhi
What if San Antonio gets to the finals and Kawhi outplays LeBron? Like, that's not impossible. Kawhi could shut LeBron down. You know,
right.
LeBron really struggles against Kawhi at times, so.
Yeah, that's true, because if the Spurs win the title, he's probably going through LeBron and KD.
All right, let's move on to the rest, some of our honorable mentions, see who's going to round off the top 10. But first, a message from our friends at Indochino. I am an oddly shaped guy. I'm about 6'6". I've got really big shoulders and kind of a small chest in comparison. And buying suits off the rack was always really difficult for me, whether I was going to Men's Warehouse when I was a lot younger, or even just trying to go to more expensive department stores once I was a lawyer. I even got another custom suit made as well that fit better than the off the rack stuff, but still wasn't great. I also just had a devil of a time trying to find the exact suit that I wanted. I was just hoping to find the right size, and then they would tailor it for me. I couldn't get the exact color I wanted, not to mention there's no way you can customize the linings or the lapels or the style or the cut of the pockets. Indochino lets you do all of that. You can drop by one of their 9 North American showrooms, pick from hundreds of fabrics and patterns, or if you're not nearby one of those showrooms, they have a tutorial on their site to show you how to measure yourself in 14 different areas. And that will enable you to get a premium made-to-measure suit for just $389 when you enter that cap space code at checkout. I've got a bunch of their shirts. I've got a bunch of their suits now. I've recommended them to a bunch of my friends that they all have thought that they're great. And it's going to be the best fitting suit that you own because it's made for you instead of just some schmo who is the typical guy that they make off the rack suits for. And it's the exact pattern, fabric, all that that you want. So once again, the way to get started with them, Indochino.com, enter that familiar cap space code. Easy to remember because we talk about it all the time on the program. That'll get you that $389 price. And also, of course, let them know that you came from us for tracking purposes. Indochino.com, promo code cap space. All right, let's get a drum roll. If we had a producer, we would do that, but we don't. For your tier four, Danny.
This caused me a lot of heartburn. Because there are a serious number of players that are worthy of consideration, but the guys that I ended up using to fill 8, 9, and 10 are all young, and I also might, well, actually, one of them is not that young. Number 8, Giannis. Number 9, Anthony Davis. And number 10, Jimmy Butler. Davis was the hardest for me because I had to kind of reconcile the idea of the issue of whether he wants to play center, but how this change in format actually really helped that, because I thought if we got into a playoff series, he played a ton of minutes in that series that they played against the Warriors in 2015, he could maybe not play it for 35-40 minutes a game, but that you could be, go to that sort of the equivalent of Draymond at center, go to that when you need to, and that he would be game to do that. And that makes him a game changer, because we've seen the Pelicans be strong defensively at when he does that, and he's already an incredible offensive player.
This was very difficult for me. I had just a ton of players in this next tier, probably going down to, like, you know, the 15th best player in the league. But I think you are just criminally underrating John Wall and Isaiah Thomas and favoring guys whose just teams are not winning as much, who are not contributing to wins as much. Thomas in particular, I mean, this season that he's having, I get that he hasn't been that good before. He's been ineffective relatively in the playoffs the last 2 years. So that gives me some pause about him. The guy has 34% usage and 62% true shooting. Fourth in the NBA in offensive RPM. He is 70th overall in RPM, and that's because, in theory, under RPM, he is the worst defensive player in the league. I don't buy that for a second. A lot of that is just the fact that the box score prior and just a prior for how tall he is negatively affects his defensive RPM. I've heard that said he's the worst defensive player in the league. Like, no, that's clearly false. Like, the Celtics have had an effective defense, even with him playing for many years now, and they're really starting to round into better shape defensively as well. But just the offensive season that this guy is having, like, it just, it deserves recognition. Like, he's got to be in the top 10 to me, even if, you know, he hasn't been as effective in the playoffs and doesn't have the history. You can't ignore the offensive season he's having. And I think same thing with John Wall as well. When you look at these incredible shooting numbers that guys like Otto Porter and Brad Beal have had, I think a lot of that is what he's doing. He's slipped a little bit defensively this year, but still pretty solid. And when you just look at what those guys' teams have done compared to AD's team and Giannis's team, Giannis, another guy too, who I think can be more easily stopped in the playoffs as well, just because of his lack of a jumper, and he doesn't really have a ton of moves. He's very dependent on transition. So I would just go with Wall and Thomas. Giannis would be in the same tier. Butler would be too, but especially Butler. Like, I don't see how you can say that he's been better than, like, Wall and Isaiah this year.
So this is interesting, because I of course heavily considered both Wall and Thomas, but I had both of them below Kyle Lowry. I think Lowry has been, you know, yeah, there is a difference in offensive value, but yeah, Lowry
has just sucked in the playoffs too many times for me.
Well, I mean, okay, so you're going to say, you're going to use that, you're going to discount that for Isaiah Thomas, but not for Kyle Lowry, when Lowry has been, in my opinion, has been better than Isaiah Thomas.
But Lowry has been a lot around longer in the playoffs. It just seems like every year he's just, like, completely inexplicably not good. And Lowry just is not as much of a shot creator as Thomas. I think he's also actually slipped defensively a lot this year. You know, that used to be a big part of his argument. I think that he has not been as effective there. He's also older than Thomas, where you would expect Thomas to be getting better. You would expect Lowry to be getting worse. And just the ways in which, and I think that Thomas has at least shown the ability to have some big games, but, and Thomas's game has also grown a lot, you know, in specific ways. We've talked about how much better he is operating off the ball these days, for example, how much better of a shooter he is. So I'm just willing to buy his improvement a little bit more, and especially like how good he's been in the clutch this year as well. Like, he just has been unstoppable. And it's just, while Kyle Lowry is always great in the on-off stats, and he's been very effective and he's been very efficient this year, you just don't look at Kyle Lowry and say, wow, this guy's unstoppable. And like, Isaiah Thomas has been unstoppable this year. And I think that that's just harder to deal with in the playoffs than Lowry, who's just kind of steady in a lot of areas, very good in a lot of areas, but doesn't pop out with like one skill that's just like, all right, we cannot deal with this guy.
I'm fine with giving him credit for growing and having it this year, but when somebody has shown that growth in a year and then hasn't had to, you know, hasn't really gone through that cauldron yet, I'm giving him partial credit, and I'm ready, willing, and able to give him full credit, you know, if that's what comes. But he hasn't. And Isaiah, when we're talking about the cauldron of a playoff series, when you start to get, especially after the first round, get into the most talented teams in the league, there aren't hiding places for him. Yes, I agree with you that he is not the worst defensive player in the league. But if you are building a theoretical playoff team and you have Isaiah Thomas against, let's say, the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are not the best team in the league. They're probably somewhere around sixth or seventh. And they are not this appallingly unfair example here. I mean, if I wanted to go really unfair, I'd go like the Warriors or Cleveland. There is not a place to put him. And while he is a very talented offensive player, and if he carries every single thing over that he has done this year, I have him, when Tim Bontemps did his media straw poll, I had Isaiah Thomas fifth in the MVP. I fully appreciate what he is doing this year. But when you get into that, the best teams in the league, it's not that he is the worst defensive player in the league, but he becomes a negative in a way that is a real tactical problem.
We'll see. I mean, I don't think he's any worse than, like, you know, a Damian Lillard or something, who again is his own problem as well.
They have two playoff series wins because they won against the Clippers when everybody got hurt, and they beat the Rockets.
Yeah. And Dame's been pretty good in the playoffs, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Overall, so I mean, that's why I have John Wall ahead of Isaiah for that reason. And then my number 10 again was very difficult. I had Anthony Davis, and Giannis, I just, having not seen him really in the playoffs, his first year at this level, how well is his defense gonna translate? He's not really on a team that's any kind of a threat or a contender. You know, maybe that's not his fault, maybe it is, we'll see. He doesn't have probably as good a coaching or as good of a culture around him or anything like that. But I'm just, with him being that young, I'm just not quite ready to go there yet with him. He certainly was in this tier. As I said, it was very difficult to split hairs. Who else was in this tier for you if we were going to go beyond the top 10 for you?
Okay, so my three were Giannis, AD, and Butler. Lowry, Wall, and Isaiah are all there. And then I'll say all the other guys that I considered, and I'm not saying these guys were all in the same tier, but I had real trouble. So I think that's actually where I would draw the line. So then it would be 13 guys. But the other ones that I considered and are right in this mix: Gordon Hayward, Paul George, Draymond, Rudy Gobert, and then I'd say that's probably it. And then I also, just like in the back of my mind, I'm sitting there going, well, if I have those guys, what about Towns and Jokic? But I think they're a tier below.
Yeah, and you could even say like Marcus Ole, DeMarcus Cousins. Sure. Like, should get DeMarcus. You guys know how I'm kind of out on him these days, just because his defense is so bad and the attitude issues. So he wouldn't seriously be in that part of the discussion for me. Dame Lillard would not be in there for you?
I think he probably would be. I think what suffered for Dame is that he was below all these other point guards, and I think I just kind of got point guard fatigue. So yeah, he should probably be in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, 10th in offensive RPM, only 22nd in KP's win percentage this year. But pretty good track record of some big moments in the playoffs, track record of being a part of an outstanding offense really for his entire career with the shooting that he provides. Having a little bit of a down year, Portland's having a down year, his defense is quite problematic. Towns and Jokic, to me, I just wasn't quite willing to go there just because of, I think, defensively, especially Jokic, but Towns as well. I mean, Jokic has a good defensive RPM. I don't buy that for a second because just watching him, like, yeah, he gets his hands on some balls and he's a good rebounder, but, you know, he can just be attacked relentlessly in pick and roll, and he can't guard shooters either. And Towns, for any big to have a negative defensive RPM is awful, just because bigs generally, you know, the average for a center is probably, you know, like plus 1.5 defensive RPM or plus one or something. Negative 1.39 for a center, that is just really, really bad. He is 14th in win percentage, and, you know, certainly he might be the best offensive center in the NBA already, even if you want to count Anthony Davis, but just defensively not quite there, hasn't even made the playoffs yet. Hasn't really ever done much in the clutch in his career either, in part maybe because he doesn't get the ball enough. What about Kyrie Irving?
Again, the point guard fatigue issue. He's below Lillard for me, but yeah, he should have been included.
Well, if we're saying...
But he wouldn't... Kyrie would not have made my top 10. That's the other part that I always have trouble with also considered. It's like, there is no reasonable way that Kyrie Irving would have made my top 10.
No, I agree with you, but a lot of people would say, hey, we're talking about winning a playoff series. Like, wasn't he unbelievable in the playoffs? Wasn't he unbelievable against the Warriors? But the big stipulation for me that really took him out of consideration for this tier is the with average talent around him. And when you look at what their record has been without LeBron James in the Kyrie Irving era, when, you know, they've a 10% winning percentage when James is out. I mean, Kyrie has just not shown the ability to be the primary option on a team. And then, you know, also his defense, except on rare occasions, is also pretty bad.
Well, if we theoretically swapped Kyrie Irving and Damian Lillard, do you think Portland's offense would be better or worse?
I think it'd probably be worse.
And their defense, you know, is probably similar, I would say. You know, it's in the same ballpark. So, like, that, yeah, to me, that's the best argument.
Yeah, Dame at least can defend in the post a little bit. I do think Irving, when he really locks in, can be pretty aggressive, like getting some steals and stuff. But yeah, I'd say Dame is probably maybe a little bit better defender than Curry. They're both really awful, though.
Kyrie is one of the best players in the league at playing next to LeBron James, and that is no small feat. You know, that it is in some ways an easy ask, but in other ways a hard ask, because you have to basically deal with, you know, having somebody who's ball dominant next to you. And like, Russell Westbrook would not be very good in that role. You know, he'd be a good player, but he wouldn't work in that. And you give credit where credit is due. But Kyrie Irving has not had to shoulder that burden. So A, he hasn't proven it. And B, in the small amount of time he has gotten it, he hasn't shown enough evidence to say, well, if you extrapolated this over that circumstance, you can justify that opinion.
Are we not giving enough credit to Draymond Green? Consistently, every year, top five in RPM, probably the best defensive player in the league, not an offensive liability, although he is definitely having a down offensive season compared to last year, both in terms of his finishing at the rim, his three-point shooting, his ability to post up. He's been horrible at that this year, when he actually had some measure of effectiveness at that last year on switches. But nonetheless, I mean, still just a wonderful player. And someone who the advanced stats always like more, at least the on-off stuff. He's only 36th in KP's win percentage that, you know, mostly focuses on box score stats. I think he was in the high 20s in that last year, or I'm sorry, the low 20s in that last year, like 22nd or something. I think he was actually my toughest omission out of the top 10. I went with AD instead, but it's really hard to know if you just added Draymond Green to an average team, you know, how much he would really be able to affect them. You know, I don't think he's going to help their offense that much. And, you know, does he make them an awesome defense by himself? Probably pretty close. But it's despite the fact that we're in a new age, and I really, really appreciate his contribution, seeing him in person 45 times a year, I'm just not quite able to get on board with him in comparison to just some of the more traditional high usage, high scoring superstars, like someone, say, AD or even Giannis.
He was the single hardest player for me to reconcile with this criteria, because his presence alone gets you awfully close to having a very good defense, but But a lot of that does depend on your surrounding talent. I mean, and depend on if so for a 7-game series, yeah, if you're saying that criteria, then he's probably going to play a lot of center. And Draymond at center is an amazingly versatile thing. You can make, you know, you could draw kind of a parallel in some ways to a bizarro Russell Westbrook, you know, in the way that like he could, I think you could build some teams that had average shooting at the 1-4. And because he's the 5, that would look a lot better because you're playing at the 5 instead of at the 4. And offensively, you know, the problem is that I think he's a lot better as the second or third best offensive player, or maybe even further down that list than, you know, theoretically, if you're surrounding him with average talent, he's going to be either the best or the second best. But he's so phenomenally talented, I think it would work. But since I don't know it would work, he's in that next, like that tier that is the also considered basically in my tier 4 as well. And it would not floor me in the least if we could theoretically actually explore this, if he would be better than that. I was sitting there going like, why do I have Giannis than have Draymond off the list? Because you could easily make an argument that Draymond would be better.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I know what some of the stats say. I know what some of the other stats say. To get a guy who just is, you know, not a top 100 offensive player in the league. Well, maybe he's higher than that, just because the ability to play center and then also like handle the ball and shoot threes, I think that is pretty valuable to be a grab and go guy. Maybe we're underrating that, even if he's, you know, relatively inefficient in terms of his own offense. But yeah, I still think, especially with some of the Pelicans' resurgence on defense this year and the effectiveness of some of those 80 at center lineups, I assume he'd actually be willing to play center in the playoffs on this theoretical average team. But yeah, so he was my number 10. So to round it off, why don't we finish up, just repeat what our tier 4 is. I had John Wall at number 8, Isaiah Thomas at number 9, Anthony Davis at 10, and then filling out that tier, Draymond Green, Giannis. And I think that's probably it for that tier. I would put everyone else that we're talking about just a little bit below them, although again, still very, very close. And so that would include Jimmy Butler, Karl Towns, Dame Lillard, Paul George, Kyle Lowry. It probably would be that next tier for me.
My tier 4, the players that made the list: Giannis, AD, Jimmy Butler, 8, 9, 10. Then also in that group, Kyle Lowry, John Wall, Draymond Green, Isaiah Thomas. Those ones aren't in order. I just have them in also considered.
Yeah. If I didn't say Butler, by the way, I meant to as kind of that next tier. Yeah,
I think you did. And then I would have the next group. So yeah, so that's where that line would be. And then I have another big group after them of guys that are, I mean, Gobert's another fascinating one for this, because I mean, we've been able to see him defensively, you know, anchor a team that we thought was going to be great defensively. And they've been very good without a lot of the other key players.
Yeah, it's hard for him, Hayward, Giannis, even Jimmy Butler has really only been Jimmy Butler in one playoff series. Towns, Jokic, Cousins even has never made the playoffs either. Like if you've never made the playoffs in your career, much less played well in the playoffs, it's just very hard to put you in the top 10. And you know, maybe that's just because being unfair to some of these guys that they're on bad teams, but especially given what the criteria is this year, it's tough. And I realize that Isaiah has not played that well in the playoffs up until now, but still it's just tough when you've got these young guys like, all right, you're gonna have to get there and prove it as one of the main guys team before we can talk about you in this area.
This might be putting you on the spot a little bit, but you have a far better memory for these sort of things than I. How many times would you say Russell Westbrook has really done that? He's put, you know, he's had a playoff series where you could say like he is a meaningful part of the reason why the Thunder won.
Well, I think in 2012, for sure. I mean, and even in the finals, you know, he had that great game 4 where they lost in overtime. You know, 13, he was robbed of the chance to do it by kind of a questionable play by Pat Beverly. 13, 14, I mean, he had some really nasty games in that series against the Clippers that they won. So you would have to say then at that point, you know, I mean, first round series against overmatched opponents, we're not really talking about.
Right.
I think he was good, not unbelievable in that series against the Spurs. And then in the games that they won against Golden State last year, you know, those games 3 and 4, he certainly was, you know, that fast break that he was leading was absolutely overwhelming. I wouldn't say that he's been like a bad playoff player.
No, but he's also certainly
had, yeah, but he's also had some times where he's just been inefficient, hasn't, you know, has maybe not been able to really lead his team. But, you know, I he's definitely had some moments, but he's also had some ugly moments.
The reason why I framed it the way I did was the idea of a series for him, because he has had stretches. I mean, in that Western Conference Finals last year, he had some moments and some games where he was absolutely undeniable, and that's a part of the Russell Westbrook experience. But he was also a significant culprit, one of many, for what happened in the last three games of that series. And it against the Spurs, from my memory, and that's why I defer to you, is because your memory on this is better than mine. I remember him being a very good player and an important part of why they won, but not necessarily the reason, especially when you saw in those series that a big part of what opened the door was just some of the crazy lineups they could throw out there. And Russ, since he plays the point guard position, he's just a smaller part of that versatility than Durant is, than at that time Serge Ibaka was. So I'm not using this as a cudgel by with to bash Russell Westbrook. And it's not like Isaiah, where to me, Isaiah hasn't really had that definitive playoff stretch. But I wonder, that's why this year is so important for me with him, is just, what does he do with this platform? And even though they're not going to be expected to win the series, no matter who they face, can he, you know, can they outperform their seed? What, not in terms of series result, but just in terms of overall, like, game-to-game impact?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, maybe if he has a great series and, you know, takes whoever they play in the first round to seven, and, you know, maybe I'd feel a little bit differently about him. But I expect him to actually be a lot worse in the playoffs this year, because for some of the, a lot of the reasons I talked about, just like, because I think his game is kind of more stoppable. It's a little bit more one note than a lot of these guys. One thing I wanted to talk about is just comparing, at least for my list, last year I had Steph Curry number one in tier by himself. He's number two this year, and a controversial number two at that. Biggest riser, LeBron James, we had as five, and I'll defend that a little bit, because for a number of reasons. One, I thought in that his 2015 finals was pretty overrated. And then his jump shot completely abandoned him. Cleveland couldn't stop anybody last year either. It looked like they had no chance against the Warriors at this time last year. And it looked like, you know, hey, LeBron wasn't as good in the 2015 finals. And now he's a year older, so it's just going to get worse. And he completely defied that by his finals performance last year. And so maybe that'll be an outlier and he'll kind of go back to gentle decline. But as of right now, it looks like that 2015 finals was the outlier, because he was awesome in the 2014 and 13 finals as well, and just 2014 he just didn't have the team around him either. So that was one of the big risers last year. KD, Kawhi, Russ, Chris Paul were all the same. We had Harden in tier three, a little bit lower. You'll remember how disappointing last year was for the Rockets. His defense was awful. I think, you know, this year he clearly is having a much better season, and that's why he's into the higher tier. And then we had Kyle Lowry, to me, was number seven overall, leading off tier three. And just after another season of injuries, being older, bad playoffs last year, that's why I kind of moved him down a little bit. And Draymond, I think, is a little bit higher. And then, you know, the biggest riser probably is Giannis, who we wouldn't have even remotely been talking about at this level. And then and John Wall is the other one too, who was had a really down year last year. Would have made more sense him being here after his 2015 season, but he, you know, was injured most last year, and the Wizards disappointed.
I had not opened my document until you brought up the idea of looking at what our top 10s were last year, and I cracked up because my tier 2 last year was number 2 Kevin Durant and tier number 3 Kawhi Leonard, and just those two guys by themselves, which is exactly the same tier 2 that I have now. I flip-flopped Curry and LeBron, because I had LeBron 4. I also had Russ over Chris Paul, which I have now flipped, which is interesting considering the years they've had. And then, yeah, I had Harden in my next tier down with AD, who I still have there, Lowry, who I still have there, but I moved him to 11th, and then Draymond. So, you know, jumped Giannis. Giannis and Butler, I think, both have had fabulous years. But yeah,
It's interesting. And you've basically, like, exchanged LeBron and Curry with one another. Yeah. And it's interesting. Like, Kawhi, yeah, he had this amazing improvement last year, but he's had even more of an improvement, I think, this year. Like, he, even if you're going to say that he's still number three, I think, you know, he's still way better, you know, in the regular season this year. It's just, we'll see how that turns out in the playoffs, I guess.
So a question that I wanted to ask you, because I was started thinking about this with this project, is who that we haven't said their name at all, even in passing, do you think is most likely, probably, let's say the most fun is most likely to make the list in proper, but to also, if we want to make it a little bit easier, to make the list in consideration, because I have one person in mind.
Let me think on that for 1 second. Are you going to say Miles Turner?
No, I'm not. I'm going to say Joel Embiid, because Embiid...
Yes. Yeah,
his defense. Right. So the issues that we have with Rudy Gobert, you know, Rudy, phenomenal player, defensive player of the year candidate. He's been amazing, actually, offensively the last couple weeks. Though that's more in scoring and just they've been a little bit more aggressive with how they give him the ball. Embiid's offensive ceiling is just so much higher, and if he can reach that level, then he can become the kind of, not necessarily the Anthony Davis, the bizarro Anthony Davis, but the closer to that. And at center, the kind of the calculus shifts and defense is more important than offense, in my opinion. And so if he can be a defensive player of the year candidate and be a good to very good offensive player, then that probably, if he could prove that he's healthy, could put him on this list.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at KP's win percentage statistic, I think he's in at least the top 20, if not the top 10. There's actually two other names that we probably should have mentioned. One of them is Klay Thompson. He at least deserves to be in the honorable mention for me, especially because of just like how incandescent he can get in the playoffs at times. I just think he's a little bit too inconsistent in the playoffs as well, where if a team really locks into stopping him. But I mean, you think about some of the performances that he had when Curry was out last year. And then, of course...
He was the MVP of the first two rounds of the playoffs last year.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point. And then, of course, you know, that legendary game six that he had, but, you know, didn't really do much in the finals either. And that's something that needs to be considered as well. And Paul Millsap maybe should be talked about a little bit, but he's a guy that I think, you know, is not as good of a playoff player, even though he did have that one crazy 40-point game. You know, generally just has not been able to be effective against Cleveland. Not really, you know, is miscast as a primary option and a good defensive player, to be sure, even a great defensive player, but not someone who's been able to change the game for the Hawks against Cleveland, their primary competition. The other guy who we probably should at least discuss, even though you and I both, I'm sure, agree that he doesn't belong in this conversation, is DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, are you really going to make me say mean things about DeMar DeRozan again?
I can do it if you want.
Well, so basically...
And it's not mean, it's just, you know...
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's like, people got mad at me for saying I thought Devin Booker had the lowest ceiling of like that group of like the five best young players in the league. And it's like, no, I mean, yeah, he scored 70 points the other day and that was fabulous, but we could talk about that another time. But DeRozan to me, the big issue with him is that he fails the presence alone test. Like, I don't think just having him gives you a successful offense. And I think just having him really hurts your defense. So, you know, if you're comparing him to Kyrie Irving,
he hasn't been good in the playoffs. Of all the players that we've discussed, he is probably the most susceptible to just being shut down by good defense, you know, with Paul George being the example. But really, like, any good wing stopper who with some size, he's just so dependent on going one-on-one and trying to like bully guys around. You know, if he's being guarded by a shooting guard, he can be really effective because the guy just doesn't have the size to deal with him. But if you just put a Paul George type of wing on him, he can't get good shots.
And he'll still take shots.
And he sucks on defense, as you said. Yeah, and he'll still take shots. That's right. I mean, like, I was talking, you know, 11 months ago, he was so bad against the Pacers that I even, like, brought up the idea to Carol Lawson of whether, like, he should just not play. Like, he should come off the bench or something, which, you know, they were never going to do. But he was shooting 6 of 19 every game in that series.
Yeah, I think that the analog for me is Kyrie, and I think Kyrie he has a higher offensive ceiling, and they both have low defensive floors.
Yeah, Kyrie can be unstoppable one-on-one, and that's maybe why he just deserves some more credit. But DeRozan is not unstoppable one-on-one. He beats up bad defense, and he's inefficient against good defense.
Also makes DeRozan a more valuable regular season player and Kyrie a more valuable postseason player.
All right, anything else that you wanted to add or realizations you had as we went through this process?
This is the best articulation of why the point guard renaissance matters, because there are so many guys, like even for us, the players that just missed the list, almost all of those were point guards, and there were a ton of point guards. I mean, mine, and Harden and LeBron basically have that offensive role, whether we're going to call them that or not. And it's an incredibly valuable thing. And even with less scarcity than so many other elements like wings, that is still such an important part of every successful team.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I touched on this earlier, but it's just how much awesome talent there is in the league right now and the numbers that some of these guys are putting up. And I'm just very, very curious to see who out of Giannis and Karl Towns and Embiid, if he can get healthy again, and Jokic, who of those guys are going to be the ones who really vault into this top 10. And still, to me, of the guys who are the top seven that we talked about, the only one of them that you would reasonably think, and we hit on this in the 2019 Crystal Ball episode too, the only one of those top seven guys that you think is likely to be better next year would be Kawhi. All the rest of these guys are in their late 20s and probably aren't going to be as good next year if they follow the normal aging curve. Late 20s or later, in the case of some like LeBron.
My pet theory is that we both have the same line at tier three, is that the line between tier three and tier four is going to narrow, but that it's not going to break next year. And then the year after that is when we're going to start to see that turn.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, when are the ageless LeBron James and Chris Paul like finally going to start to show some real signs? Signs of slippage.
Seems like it's going to happen at some point, but I don't want it to happen ever. I really don't.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for listening. That will do it for today. Announcement: Twitter NBA show, unless they decide to rest everybody, will happen Wednesday. Spurs versus Warriors. We'll be doing the second screen. Danny and I together during the game, maybe do a little bit of post game as well, that will then turn into Dunked On. That'll be a good one. 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific on ESPN, but you can turn that sound down a little bit and listen to our dulcet tones instead. Thanks so much to our sponsors today. Movement Watches, mvmtwatches.com/capspace gets you 15% off your order. And Indochino, use that capspace code to get any premium made-to-measure suit for just $389. We'll be back tomorrow. Going to do 5 episodes this week after 3 last week due to the tournament. Looking forward to doing those and looking forward to talking to you again soon. Till then. Your favorite note-finding, mystery-solving podcast is back. Found returns this week live from South by Southwest. If you haven't heard, Found takes random things found in the ground and tries to solve the mysteries behind them. From love notes to babies, you never know what you're going to get. Find out what random things were found this week. Go listen to the newest episode of Found and subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts.